98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Here we go, the top stories of the day on the Burns and Gambo show, presented to you at 4 o'clock. We call it the 4 o'clock reset. This is where you go to get caught up on everything going on in sports. We've talked a lot about it. We will continue to talk a lot about it. But one of the top stories, of course, Larry Scott, out as commissioner of the Pac-12. That will happen officially this summer. I believe June 30th is his last day. And now the conference begins their search for his replacement. A lot of interesting names in that search, Gambo, including former ASU AD Gene Smith, former U of A AD Greg Byrne. Smith is now with Ohio State. Byrne is with Alabama.
Yeah, Gene's been there since 2005 when he left ASU. He would be a great hire. I mean, his football knowledge, he's been on so many committees. He's been very active as an athletic director. Now, would he want to leave Columbus, Ohio? You know, I don't know. But at 61 years old, this would be he'd be a great hire. Byrne, I'm don't know as much about him as I do about Gene Smith, but they'll interview many candidates, and it's very important to get this one right.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of news from the NFL today. There's one coaching vacancy left in the NFL, and that's the Houston Texans, because the Eagles hired Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni as their next head coach. He had an extensive interview for the job on Tuesday that spilled over into Wednesday. There was a belief, according to ESPN, that it was down to two guys, Josh McDaniels and Sirianni, and it went to Sirianni. He now gets to coach the Eagles.
39 years old. Never called plays before, right? He's never been a play caller. I think this has a lot to do with, getting somebody like that that can help, get the most out of Carson Wentz. They got a lot invested in him, and that's to me, that's what this is about. Seeing what they could do with Carson Wentz. They go with a 39-year-old guy who's never been a play caller before, but considered an up-and-comer.
Dan Campbell was introduced today as the new head coach of the Lions, and his introductory press conference is all anybody's talking about in football today.
So this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up, and then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right? That's going to be the mentality.
This was an epic introductory news conference. Maybe the most epic one ever. He won the press conference today. He won. He was passionate. He was emotional. He connected with that fan base. It was 90 minutes long, and it's worth listening to every second of that press conference. He was sensational.
No question about it. A couple other quick notes from the NFL. Dwayne Haskins has been signed to a futures contract by the Pittsburgh Steelers, the former first-round draft pick by Washington. He's got a new home at Pittsburgh. And Robert Kimdichie, former Cardinals first-round pick, a workout with the Indianapolis Colts, Gambo.
He's still around, Robert Kimdichie, huh?
Yeah, he's still around.
I'm more concerned with the Haskins thing. I mean, probably for them, worth a shot to take him. I mean, nobody picked him up after he left Washington. He left in December, after he was stripped of his captaincy. He was photographed without a mask at a party. He started that next week. Week 16, nobody picked him up until now. But, you don't know what's going to happen with Roethlisberger. He's undecided on retirement right now. So you bring in Haskins. He's a, first-round pick, high pick, and you see if you can get his career going at 23 years old.
But our top story of the day today on this Thursday, last night's Suns win over the Rockets, and it was a dominating performance.
CP3 dribble drive, lobs to Ayton for the jam time. A beautiful alley-oop from Chris Paul to DeAndre Ayton.
That's John Bloom with the call last night. DeAndre Ayton, 26 points, 17 rebounds, 5 blocks. He did it on 11 of 15 from the floor. The first Suns player with a 25-point, 15-rebound, 5-block game since Gambo's all-time favorite, Sean Marion, back in 2007. It's the last time anybody put up numbers like that.
He was amazing last night. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting. I haven't seen any yet. You know, all the, you know, the Twitter people that wanted to see have DeAndre go to the bench and Dario Saric to start last week. I haven't heard from any of them. I don't know where they are.
That's strange.
They must be working.
Yeah.
Must be
they
out
must be
right now.
Working or getting their coffee or
I don't know where they are, you know, because when
maybe just maybe they realized that maybe benching him wasn't the best idea. Maybe they've had a change of heart, Gambo. People can change, Gambo. Remember what Rocky said to the Soviets
at
the end
change.
Of Rocky IV? Exactly. If I can change, you can change. Everybody can change. Maybe that's what's happened to all those people who wanted Ayton to get benched.
Look, I thought it was ridiculous, okay? Maybe I'll even say dumb to talk about DeAndre Ayton going to the bench. It just didn't make any sense. They ended up putting Jay Crowder on the bench and starting Cam Johnson. I like Cam off the bench, too. I just think the starting lineup has to play better. And the starting lineup will play better if DeAndre Ayton can play like that more consistently. That was a great performance. Absolutely a great performance. He took the game over late when he had to. He had an unbelievable stretch in there. The five block shots. He was efficient. He was aggressive. He was great. I mean, he was the best player on the court. And you need that. You need that. Not all the time he doesn't need the best player on the court. But he needs, at times, he needs to be the best player. And he was last night, and they needed every bit of what he gave them because they couldn't hit three-point shots to save their lives. They shot 23% from three-point range. They were 8 for 34. And I always say this team was living and dying by the three. Well, if Ayton plays like that, like he did last night, 11 out of 15 from the field, 26 points, 17 rebounds, six of them were offensive, five block shots. You can miss three pointers. You could have an off night with your three, and if he's hitting those shots and being aggressive like that, you could still win.
Yeah, look, I mean, defensively, the five blocks, it was great to see. I don't think it's that surprising. We know that that's there. The 17 rebounds, you talked about him being an elite rebounder, and it's obvious that he is. But even when all of that, they should bench him, talk was swirling around a week ago, even you would acknowledge, look, offensively, his game leaves a lot to be desired. Offensively, yes. He still has a lot to learn and a long way to go. And that, to me, was the revelation last night. It's not just the dunks, but the dunks are the easiest thing to point to. Because in the past, you know, when he gets that feed from Bridges underneath the hoop, in the past, he just kind of softly lays that in. There was nothing soft about that game last night. He threw it down with a vengeance. That alley-oop from Chris Paul, with a vengeance. It was hardcore basketball, and we're not used to seeing that out of Ayton. I described this play earlier. There was one play where he started with the ball at the top of the key, dribbled his way down into the low post. He had DeMarcus Cousins on his hip, and he was bullying him. DeAndre Ayton was bullying DeMarcus Cousins in the post in the name of trying to get good position. He turned around with a five-foot jump shot and nailed it. And that's the kind of moment, right? It's not even the dunk so much. It's that kind of recognition of your physical abilities and how much more you have than the other guy that will free DeAndre Ayton to be the player he's capable of being. I saw that play. I was so excited to see it because that is the recognition of everything that this guy is capable of. I just hope he can do it on most nights. Not every night, but most nights, Gambo.
That basket you're talking about, the jumper over Cousins, 91-84 lead. Then right after that, the next basket was my favorite. He had a high screen and roll with Chris Paul. He rolled to the basket, got an alley-oop from Paul, dunked it with a one-handed dunk. They were up 95-84. Then he blocked the shot by Cousins. Then he blocked the shot by Gordon. Then he nailed a long two. Some people thought it was a three, but he had a foot, you know, piece part of the foot on the line. Then he had a defensive rebound, ran the court, took a pass from McHale, and slammed it in with for another one-handed dunk, 99-84. It was as good a stretch as you'll ever see for DeAndre Ayton. You mentioned, you know, talked about like this four-minute stretch. He was completely dominated. It was all him. He dominated that, and that allowed them to jump out to a 15-point lead. They were up 101-86 thanks to his sheer dominance on both ends of the court.
It was so much fun to see. And now, like Monty Williams has said, like Chris Paul has said, like Devin Booker all said after last night, now do it again. Go do it. We all know you can do that. Do you know you can do that? Does DeAndre Ayton know you can be that guy every single night? Because there isn't a tool in your toolbox that you don't possess that would allow you to not do that, right? I mean, you've got every single tool possible to be able to play like that every night, and the Suns continue to push him to understand that. When we come back, and by the way, the next game for the Suns is coming up tomorrow night against the Denver Nuggets. When we come back, he's searching for a second Super Bowl ring. His team is hosting the NFC Championship game, and Aaron Rodgers says there's no pressure. Really? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Pressure. Aaron Rodgers says that's the title of a Billy Joel song. I'm under no pressure. Everything's fine.
Yeah, Bill, I think no more pressure than usual. I think a lot of times, you know, storylines and pressure and those kind of comments are, you know, good stuff for you guys to write about. But I think it starts with the mentality and the focus. Obviously, I put pressure on myself to perform every single week. And then I think there's a lot to be said for being able to harness that pressure and the fear of failure and focus it to, you know, real positive. And that's something you learn over the years. But I don't feel any extra pressure going on this week.
For somebody who talked openly about wanting the NFC Championship game at home and how different things would be if the NFC Championship game were at home, I got to think there's a little, all right, you got what you wanted. Now what are you going to go do with it, right? There's got to be a little extra pressure. Because
relax.
Of that, I would
we're
going to
be okay.
All right, Aaron.
I think that's the fear of failure. So, and he mentioned that. He mentioned the fear of failure. You don't want to lose. So that's this pressure to not lose. Now, right now, today, you know, on Thursday, you know, it's going to be different than in the game. What happens if you get down 7-0? What if you throw a pick and you're down 14-3? You know, what if the second half starts, you're down two scores and they have the ball? I mean, this pressure. The pressure comes in the game. The fear of failing is with you all the time, the fear of failing. But the pressure, you're not going to have that. He's not going to have that now in the press conference. You know, he'll have it in the game. That pressure happens once he gets out there on the field and they start playing.
Well, and I think the pressure too. And I'm thinking more and more about this while I'm listening to you talk. I think the pressure, it doesn't come necessarily from the fact that they're home and that they've never been at home for a game like this. And he's talked openly about wanting to be home for a game like this. I think the pressure for Aaron Rodgers is knowing that no matter how high of a level he's playing at right now, he's near the end. I'm not saying he's at the end, but he's certainly near the end.
So there's so many chances you have left to win one.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're will you ever be on a team this good again? You know, will you ever be on a 13-win team that's got home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs again? I would think if there's any extra quote unquote pressure on Aaron Rodgers, it comes from that, kind of the finality of it all, the how finite these opportunities are and the need to take advantage of it while you've got it in front of you, not knowing when the next time it's going to come around like this.
Yeah, I think that's that's all part of it. How many chances do you have left? Are you ever going to get there again? I mean, Dan Marino got to a Super Bowl in, what, his second year, and then he never got back again. You know, Aaron Rodgers, his team always has a chance. I mean, every year they have a chance because he's that great. But you just never know. I mean, when was the last time he won that thing? It was 10 years ago?
It's 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
10 years since he's won it.
I mean, if somebody would have said that 10 years ago after he won that, you're not going to win another one. Like, but you're going to play 10 more years. Really? I'm going to play 10 more years
right.
and not
right.
win another Super Bowl? That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that the fear of failure is legit, and I think the pressure – I mean, he could say it all he wants, but once that game starts, yeah, there is pressure. You want to win for you. You want to win for your family. You want to win for the organization. You want to win for your teammates, you know, the fan base. There's a lot of people that you want to win for, not just you. And you feel when you lose that you let those people down.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Jordan Love. Maybe he doesn't want to win for Jordan Love. Maybe that's the one guy he doesn't want to win for.
His teammates. He wants to win for all those guys. And he wants to win for his coach.
Kidding.
And he wants to win for the fans. And so there's pressure that comes with that. You know, there is. And then you feel like you do. You fear of failure. You feel like you fail if you don't win the thing.
Yeah. Rodgers also was asked, I mean, kind of something that I had alluded to a second ago about getting back to the spot. Are you worried you may never get back to this position.
I hope there's more opportunities, but I don't know. I mean, I really don't. And that's stuff that's out of my control. I mean, my future is a beautiful mystery, I think. The present is such a gift to just be able to stay in the moment and to have gratitude for being in that situation again and being with the guys and having fans at our stadium and maybe snow on an NFC championship game. I mean, I'm going to enjoy these moments for sure. Just not worry about what happens down the line.
Is your future a beautiful mystery, Gambo?
It's a magical mystery tour. Just waiting to take me away.
He's
1-1. The pressure's off in some ways. He's 1-1. He's a Super Bowl champ. He's got a ring. He's a Hall of Famer. Now it's just about adding to your legacy. The pressure, if he had never won one, well, the pressure's tremendous. And the pressure is different on Josh Allen, you know, because he doesn't have one, but he probably feels he's going to have a lot more opportunities.
Yeah, I do think there, and we talked about this a couple of days ago. I think with a guy like Rodgers, is there extra pressure? I don't know. We can go round and round about that. I do think there is that second Super Bowl is a career separator from other guys. It defines on another level a truly great, great, great career. I mean, he's had a great year. You're 100% right. Hall of Fame, guaranteed. Accolades is one of the best ever, guaranteed. All of that is there. But there is another level to that greatness that can separate him from the Drew Breeses of the world, the, for now, Russell Wilsons of the world, the guys who have gotten their Super Bowl. There's another club to join, and I've always thought of Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback so great that he would wind up with multiple Super Bowl titles. And, you know, that opportunity to be that guy, I don't know how many of these opportunities are going to come around again for him to be so close to be able to say you're a two-time Super Bowl champ. I do think that is something that would define his career and give it that extra kind of volume and that extra level to it that separates him even
more from the other guys. So it adds to his legacy, is what you're saying. But what if he doesn't win? What if they lose? What if he loses this game or he loses to Mahomes or Allen in the Super Bowl? Does it hurt him?
No. Oh, no. No. I think some people may think so.
I don't know if I believe that.
I don't know. But you know what? Well, okay, let me twist the question around. If he loses this conference championship game this weekend, and that would make him, what, 1-5 in such games, does that hurt him? I mean, he's still going to get in the Hall of Fame, but does that lessen at all what we think about Aaron Rodgers if he loses and he was 1-5 in conference championship games? Do we judge that? Do we hold that against him at all?
I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, that's part of who he is. Aaron Rodgers is one of the great quarterbacks that's ever played the game. He's a Super Bowl champion. He's won MVP awards. He's going to the Hall of Fame. But he was 1-5 in championship games. He should have won more. I mean, it's all part of it, right? Everybody is the positives and negatives. Hey, Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. Yeah, but he lost 3 times. Joe Montana never lost. Tom Brady did. Couldn't beat the Giants. Had the best team ever. Could have went undefeated and didn't do it. Like, I mean, it doesn't hurt Tom Brady as much because he's got a lot of them. But I think when you look, should Brett Favre have won more titles? Yeah, probably. You know, yeah. So I think that
should
it's
Drew Brees have won more titles. Yeah,
yes,
probably.
Yes, probably there's a lot of those guys. There's quite a few of those guys. You probably think, okay, they should have won more than one. So I think for Brady, yeah, I can still look at something, but it's so hard to find negatives in Brady because you're the best. So even with the failures that Brady had, he's still the best. With Rodgers, it's okay. Where do you rank among the greatest quarterbacks of all time? Where do you rank? Yeah. And the more Super Bowls you have and success you have in playoffs, the higher you're going to be on that list.
A big change coming to the Pac-12. Larry Scott is out as commissioner, and the general reaction has been, it's about time. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, let's send it back to Sarah. She's got an update on our Twitter poll question of the day. Fairly one-sided affair when we opened up the poll question a couple of hours ago. Let's see if we convinced anybody to change their minds.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
Did we convince anybody to change their mind?
No, we did not. Still incredibly one-sided. That's okay. Yeah. We can't win them all. The question.
I appreciate what you were trying to do. It was. Yeah. It was. I. When you read the question, I'll. I think people understand what it was you were trying to do. But it's. Sometimes the obvious answer is the obvious answer, mm-hmm. and people are going to vote with that. Go ahead. What do you got?
Yeah, so the question was just, what was your favorite part of last night's Suns win over the Rockets, Ayton's domination, Chris Paul's post-game comments, or Devin Booker's bounce back? And I also got a couple responses that said, you could have put the fact that they won in there as well, which I guess is true, because it was not a given at certain points in the game. So, yeah.
Did anybody say that they really enjoyed DeAndre Ayton coming off the bench and playing so well?
I don't think so.
No.
We did get a vote for Suns Twitter. Some people thought that was their favorite part of the game.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, Suns Twitter has really become a thing, hasn't it?
It sure has.
Yeah. That's the understatement of the year, but that's really become a thing. If you missed the Chris Paul, this was Chris Paul after the game to Kevin Ray on Fox Sports Arizona.
You know, we're supposed to win. I still don't love the way we finish games. It just don't feel good.
I love that, and that's why I appreciate what Sarah was trying to do with the poll question, because that you could make an argument that that's actually the best part about last night. They won, and here's Chris Paul like, yeah, big deal. We were supposed to win. We should have beaten that team by 20. What the hell are we so excited about?
Yeah. But he's got to get those guys to understand that. You can't be excited over that win. That win, okay, we won. So what? We should have buried that team. Mm-hmm. We were up by 15 late. We allowed them to cut it to two. I like that. I love that attitude.
Yeah, I did too, but DeAndre Ayton's night was DeAndre Ayton's night. It was kind of hard to not vote for that. So what are the percentages here, Sarah?
It's 85% who voted for DeAndre Ayton. 85. Okay. 8.4 for Chris Paul's post-game comments, and then 7% for Devin Booker's bounce back. So, yeah, okay. People were real excited about DeAndre Ayton last night.
It's a good effort, Sarah. We appreciate
for all the right reasons.
I would say not my finest, but thank you.
For all the right reasons, as Gambo would say.
You'll do better tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Tomorrow is a new day. The other co-big story of the day happened at about the same time last night as the Suns were, getting that great performance from DeAndre Ayton, and that was Larry Scott. Out as commissioner of the Pac-12, it's being termed a mutual agreement, but as Gambo said earlier, and he's absolutely right, when you have a job that pays you a salary of $5.3 million, you do not mutually agree to part ways with that job. You tend to be asked to leave a job where you're getting paid $5.5 million a year. So we're going to assume that the conference presidents, 10 of which were not among the original group that hired Larry Scott, there were only two left. Michael Crow was one of them, who were the original presidents who hired him. They had to just look at it and say, look, we've, between the embarrassing state of our football programs, between the media rights revenue and how far we behind on everybody, and the fact that we need to negotiate a winner of a deal the next time the media rights come open, we have to have somebody else in that spot. We have to.
I thought the column by John Canzano, the Oregonian guy, mm-hmm. columnist, I thought he was right on the money. I mean, he just, Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott is out, and it's about time. And he goes into details about, he built the Pac-12 network, but then he gutted it when it served him to do so. He trampled a lot of people. In the end, the outgoing commissioner would be best remembered as the guy who laid off dozens of his staff and handed out furloughs to others while accelerating his own annual bonus. He chartered jets and lavish hotel suites, and he got a $2 million interest-free loan that, as far as anyone knows, he hasn't made a single payment on. And like this guy was all about himself and not about the Pac-12 brand. And the Pac-12 brand has suffered, immensely suffered. I mean, it's an afterthought to everybody else, to the point where we laughed when the Pac-12, okay, we're going to play football now. Are they going to get enough games in to qualify for the playoffs? Seriously? Why are you even asking that dumb question? No, it doesn't even matter if they get enough games in. Whatever team is the best in the Pac-12 is not good enough to play in the playoffs. And that is a major problem. The revenue, obviously, with the television deal is a big deal. But Larry Scott failed at so many different levels, and he just didn't relate to the people in the conference. And the Pac-12, the conference itself has a long history and a lot of success, and they didn't have that success with Larry Scott in charge.
He was on Bickley and Murata back in October, and I remember now even then being surprised that Larry Scott would make himself available to anybody at that point for an article or for an interview or for anything, knowing how much outcry there was for his job and for him to be replaced. The guys asked him point blank, very blunt interview. I remember this very well now, very blunt interview. Do you feel like you've lost the support for your job from your bosses? Here's what Larry Scott said back on October 8th.
Not at all. No. I know. Look, there's a lot of rumor and speculation, and that just goes with the territory in a very public-facing role. And it's true of commissioners in other leagues as well. So it goes with the territory. I've been in commissioner roles for a couple of decades now at the Pac-12 and before, so I understand it goes with the territory. But no, it has not been a factor at all in my ongoing work for the Pac-12 and my relationship with our board.
All right. I get the whole media speak thing, but if he was truly, you know, unaware of what was going on in his surroundings and how much jeopardy his job was in, then he really was aloof and arrogant and not paying attention, because this him losing his job as commissioner of the Pac-12 is one of the worst-kept secrets in sports, right? Of course he was going to lose his job.
Yeah. Yeah, look, they're trying to say he's trying to save face. He's going to try. He's going to get another job somewhere else. I mean, Larry Scott, I'm going to look up his age. I mean, he's probably going to do something else. He made a lot of money off the Pac-12, and, you know, they're probably going to try to go out amicably, right? He still has a couple people. Michael Crow was here when he hired him. One other president was there. You mentioned the two of them. He's probably going to want to go out with some dignity, but he's getting shots everywhere. I mean, you go look at a columnist that covers this conference that's not taking some shots at Larry Scott and the terrible job that he did. So you got 6 months where people are going to – I mean, I think it would have been better off for him to just, okay, I'm out now. Let one of my assistants take over and handle it for the next – you're not doing the next TV contract. You don't have to worry about that. I mean, I think it would have been clean – because now it's 6 months to take shots at Larry Scott. I think he would have been better off clean slate, just get out of there. I'm resigning as of today, and I'm not coming back.
Look, and a point you made earlier, I think we do need to reemphasize here. Nobody, at least nobody on our show, is insisting that the Pac-12 should hold itself to the same standards as the SEC or the Big Ten. I mean, there are just it really is truly apples to oranges. The fan bases for those programs, the elite of those programs, the Pac-12 just doesn't have anything that measures up to that. They just don't have that. But that doesn't mean that those of us who are fans of the Pac-12 don't expect something better. And that doesn't mean that you can't be like the ACC or be like the Big 12, that you can't make money like the ACC or the Big 12. The SEC, no, you're probably not going to get there. The Big 10, no, you're probably not going to get there. But, and we emphasized this earlier too, if a couple of years from now there's another wave of expansion, or a couple of years from now, the Power Five conferences separate themselves from the NCAA and form their own institution, basically. If you're the Pac-12, you better make sure you're on the right side of that. Because under Larry Scott, I fear they would have been on the wrong side of that. That they would have continued with the trend of being very forgettable and being very ignorable. The Pac-12 under Larry Scott became very ignorable. And the new commissioner, whoever that man or woman is, cannot allow that to happen, because, Gambo, we could be on the verge in the next 5 years of dramatic sweeping changes in terms of college athletics and how we come to understand them. And the Pac-12 needs to make sure it remains with those Power Five groupings and not separated from them.
Well, listen, you got to go kiss USC's ass. I mean, that's what you have to do. I mean, it was about a year ago that the USC athletic director, you know, came out and said everything's on the table when somebody asked him if the USC might consider leaving the Pac-12 if the financial picture doesn't get better in the future. That was Mike Brabant, the USC athletic director. He said everything is on the table. You've got to appease the USC, because you've got to make sure that they stay. Okay, they are your anchor tenant. That's your anchor tenant right there, USC. You can't lose that. You lose them, you're not going to be able to get anybody like them. And then your conference takes a big hit, and then you'll probably have a mass exodus. Others will probably leave too. So whoever the new commissioner is, you come in and you appease USC. I know it sucks because we're Arizona and Arizona State, but you've got to make sure that USC is not going to leave the Pac-12. That's got to be clear. And so you've got to build a conference that they're going to want to stay in. And if they want to stay and UCLA wants to stay and Oregon wants to stay, okay, then you build from there. But I think you can't over, you know, you can't just come in and, okay, I'm going to work on the TV deal, and I'm going to work on this, and I'm going to work on that. Hey, I got to make this better for my top brands. And my top brand is USC. So I've got to make sure that they are happy. So the next commissioner has to come in and do that.
When we come back, the key to the AFC Championship game, is it something other than Patrick Mahomes? We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, just real quick, I want to mention this because it's kind of happening in front of our faces right now. Whether you're a big Olympics fan or not, there is another component to the story that I think it's important, and that's why I'm bringing it up. The publication, Gambo, is called The Times, and it's a London-based publication. Sarah sent me this link in Teams from one of their reporters who is reporting on a story that the Japanese government has privately concluded the Tokyo Olympics will have to be canceled because of the coronavirus. And the focus is now on securing the games for the city in the next available year, which is 2032. According to a senior member of the ruling coalition, there is an agreement that the games, already postponed a year, are doomed. The aim now is to find a face-saving way of announcing that leaves open the possibility of Tokyo playing host at a later date. Now, I don't want to minimize the Olympics because I know they're a big, big deal. There is an NBA ramification to this story big time, Gambo.
Yeah, maybe that's why the schedule's not out. Maybe that's why the second half of the schedule is not out, because they knew this was a possibility. That's smart. That's smart. Because if you don't have to worry about the Olympics, now you can, you know, you can spread that schedule out a couple more weeks. I mean, and give teams more rest, and now you can make up these games. I saw something in the other day, the BBC. Sometimes I read some of the news over there, and I read the Italian papers and stuff. But 2 days ago, they had a story, the Tokyo Olympics unlikely to go ahead in 2021. I didn't really pay that much attention to it, but I marked it. Because they said it's unlikely to take place this summer due to COVID-19. I didn't pay that much attention to it. We don't talk a lot of Olympics. But now with this news today, yeah, there definitely is an NBA and an NHL aspect of it too, because now you've got a little bit more room to work with your schedules to not have to, you know, cram all these games in at once. And that's probably why, when you think about it, why they didn't have a second half of the schedule announced for the NBA. They wanted to wait and see.
So when we have all these conversations about how are you going to make up these games, well, maybe that's how you make up these games. And you've got a little more time in the second half of the schedule that hasn't been released yet to make up these games. If you know that the pressure to get your season done by the Olympics is not pressure anymore, you don't have to worry about that. Sarah even sent me a message on Teams a second ago about, and I'd forgotten about this too, the Winter Olympics are supposed to be going on this time right now, 1 year from right now. And who knows if they're even going to be ready for that. Now, I would think by then, knowing that they don't have to worry about the summer and there are Winter Olympics being jammed in so close. And of course, there's an Olympics component to all this, too. I mean, billions upon billions of dollars that are tied up in not doing the summer games and revenue loss and things like that. But all along, I had wondered whether it was going to be practical and feasible to be able to pull those things off. And apparently, according to this report in The Times, again, this London-based publication, that right now the government of Japan is basically trying to figure out how do we say this without having egg all over our face.
Well, 11,000 athletes, 200 countries, they were supposed to take part in it. Now, what I had read in that BBC story was that just uncertainty, that the prime minister had vowed to forge ahead with plans despite mounting public opposition. So that's when I probably didn't pay that much attention to it. So that the prime minister of Japan vowed to forge ahead with plans despite mounting public opposition. I tagged this, so that's why I'm just looking at it right now. So at that point, I thought, okay, the prime minister wants to go ahead and have the games go on, but there's a lot of public pressure not to play and not to have all the travel and the hotels and with the coronavirus at the situation it is right now. That's big economic hit, and those athletes that have been waiting all this time, and that's really hard on these athletes, especially the ones that are at the end of their careers, and they looked at 2020 as their last opportunity, and now 2021, and then can they push it to 2022? You just feel for all those athletes.
Yeah, it's just something to keep an eye on, and there's local ramifications, there's national ramifications, there's international ramifications, but that's the story that's kind of coming down. On a much more sort of immediate in the now kind of moment, the Bills, Chiefs coming up this weekend, the AFC Conference Championship game, and the availability of Patrick Mahomes, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Sammy Watkins were all limited in practice on Thursday. I think I saw another quote from Andy Reid in which he said Mahomes was able to take the majority of snaps in Thursday's practice. I believe it just seems like closer and closer we're working towards the expectation of him being able to play. Interesting that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was able to go and Sammy Watkins was able to go. That's a positive side for both of them because the Bills right now defensively, it's a unit that's playing so much better than they were in the first half of the season. Can they do to the Ravens what they weren't able to do to the Chiefs the first time they played them in the regular season back when that defense wasn't playing well? In some ways, that's almost like the key to this game in the AFC Championship contest is to see how the Bills' defense is able to do because there's just so many weapons to contend with on Kansas City.
Yeah, I mean, Travis Kelce is phenomenal, and Tyreek Hill is phenomenal. And if Clyde Edwards-Helaire plays, and even if he doesn't, they've got three other running backs. But it's been a great rise for Josh Allen, and they've got a lot of weapons, too. I mean, Stephon Diggs has been fantastic for them. Now, Kansas City, they've got some really good playmakers on defense. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu, very capable. Frank Clark, Chris Jones, they can get pressure on the quarterback. So, but I think the challenge for the Bill is really – how do you stop that offense? How do you, you got Tyreek Hill, you got Travis Kelce, dangerous weapons. Sammy Watkins, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if he plays, that's really it. Which defense is going to do a better job? Because the offenses are great, but which defense is going to do a better job against the offense?
There were some real questions about the Bills' defense. Their numbers since they played the Cardinals in the Hail Murray game. The Bills' numbers, they are allowing, since their Week 11 bye, which was the week after they played the Cardinals, they're allowing 17 points per game defensively. They're allowing fewer than 340 total yards per game defensively. They've allowed a 35% third down conversion rate since their Week 11 bye. Last week against the Ravens, they held that team to 3 points and only 340 total yards. I mean, it does look like offense versus offense, and the Chiefs, their defense has to contend with some issues too, namely Stephon Diggs and how fantastic he has been this year. I mean, we rave about DeAndre Hopkins and the impact he had with the Cardinals.
Diggs was better.
Diggs was better, right?
Diggs was better.
He was better.
Yeah, he was. Hopkins was great. Diggs was better. So this is, he had an unbelievable season for them, and he was just what they needed. I mean, that's just what they needed to get that offense going for the Buffalo Bills. It was a great trade for them. And, there's a lot of trade stories. I mean, there was one on that I was looking about how, the Bills actually traded the when Kansas City took Mahomes with the 10th pick, that was a Bills draft pick. That was McDermott's first draft. And he traded with Kansas City for the 27th pick, a third-round pick, a first-round pick the following year. And Kansas City ended up with the 10th pick. Kansas City moved up to get Mahomes, and they did it with a pick that they acquired from Buffalo. So, I mean, so in a roundabout way, they talk about, well, Buffalo could have had Mahomes.
Yeah. Crazy to think. Just crazy to think. The Waste Management Phoenix Open returns February 1st through the 7th. We're giving you the chance to win the Coors Light Silver Seats to the Open. You just need to text the word CHILL to 620-620 for your chance to win. CHILL to 620-620. Suns got the win in Houston last night, and their Hall of Fame point guard wasn't all that happy by it. You'll hear from him next on the Burns and Gambo Show.